This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.
One thing that I'm afraid of, and that's the people in elected office taking away my rights. I'm not afraid of the crook that's going to come to my door, because if my dogs don't get him, I will, and it's my job to defend myself. It's not your job to protect me. It's not your job to defend me. It's your job to protect the Constitution and protect my rights to defend myself.
2-1-1-0.
This was in a book for Freemasons. Fictions are necessary to the people, and the truth becomes deadly to those who are not strong enough to contemplate it in all its brilliance. In fact, what can there be in common between the vile multitude and sublime wisdom? The truth must be kept secret, and the masses need a teaching proportional to their imperfect reason.
Broadcasting live from a bunker high atop Mount Hood.
All heading towards a fascist totalitarian state.
It's radio that's delivering the truth.
AK-47s belong in the hands of soldiers, not in the hands of criminals.
See, the problem is they don't get to determine what is right and wrong in the process. It's all done by the central government.
And here's Paul Preston and Agenda 21 Radio.
Well, hello and welcome to Agenda 21 Radio. This is the radio show that is stopping totalitarianism one exceptional American at a time. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, the question is, are you that exceptional American? I suspect you are. That's why you're listening to this radio show. I mean, come on. Is there any doubt that you're an exceptional American? And you're listening to this radio show. My suspicions are correct, of course, is that you are. Things work here on Agenda 21 Radio. And I'm really glad that you guys are listening to us here on Agenda 21 Radio. You know, it's kind of an interesting situation that when you have a wonderful set of circumstances that we have here in our country. Because we do. We have a wonderful country that Institute. I'm sorry, I'm getting ready for Brad Dacus here. And, profile. Okay, well, we got that. Anyway, we're trying to get with Mr. Anyway, so anyway, a lot of different things happening here on Agenda 21 Radio. And we're going to be getting Brad Dacus here up and running here in just a few moments. But first, we've got a lot of things to cover. What is going to be happening now that Nancy Pelosi is saying, we're not going to have a State of the Union, which, of course, is something that is not necessarily a really, really good thing. You know, the thing that is starting to come out, there's just so many really good things happening. Tulsi Gabbard. Hawaii, she's running for president, as she says. And I don't think that, I think that it's going to be kind of an interesting situation for her and running at this time. I think she's really looking at Senate position to replace Ms. Hornono, if you know what I mean. The other thing that's really popping up that's really a big one, of course, is what is going on with this investigation. More and more people are wondering about the Mueller investigation, and more people are really wondering about what's going to be happening with the, you know, the linkage, if you will, all the different things that are popping out there about the situation with James Comey. James Comey and Andrew McCabe. This is an area of exploration in this whole Mueller thing. That, you know, when you go after people poorly and illegally, things pop up.
Like a false prophet of moral righteousness,
James Comey, former FBI director, constantly pretending to be a courageous hero fighting for truth and justice. In reality, he is a hateful, vengeful, arrogant narcissist. We now know who abused power and fostered one of the most corrupt federal departments this country has ever seen. But tonight, we can report the walls are closing in on James Comey. We have yet another major development in our Hannity watch on the deep state. Former FBI General Counsel James Baker, the man who served as Jim Comey's top lawyer, he too, like others, is now under criminal investigation for leaking to the media. And Baker has long faced scrutiny over his ties to Mother Jones reporter David Korn. Remember, Korn was the first journalist to report the existence of Christopher Steele's dirty dossier in the lead up to the 2016 presidential election. So let's keep track of Comey's leadership at the FBI. You know, Mr. Integrity. Okay. Now, of course, we know Comey himself was fired by President Trump. His second in command, Andrew McCabe, was fired for lying. Andrew McCabe is now currently under a criminal investigation. Comey's top investigator, Peter Strzok, well, he was fired for his obvious political bias. He may soon be under criminal investigation, as well as his ex-girlfriend, top FBI lawyer Lisa Page. She was forced to resign over her bias. Then you got Comey's chief of staff, James Rubicki. He's resigned. And now we know Comey's general counsel, Jim Baker. Now we can report under an official criminal investigation, something Comey himself that he admitted to doing when he leaked the FBI memos about President Trump, remember, to his professor friend at Columbia, and then to the New York Times for the very purpose of spurring a special counsel investigation, which coincidentally, well, that's being carried out by Comey's close friend, Robert Mueller. How nice. So what did all the people I just list have in common? They all wanted Hillary Clinton to win, one of them 100 million to 0. They all hated and continue to hate Donald Trump. They all work together to rig our political system and fix the outcome of the 2016 election by using their powerful top positions, not rank and file, the top positions, the FBI and the DOJ, to help Hillary Clinton win, to cheat, to rig an election. And as we now know, they had an insurance policy and a media leak strategy in case Clinton didn't win 100 million to zero. Now, after James Comey was fired, top officials inside the FBI, they were angry. They acted out of that anger, malice, emotion, without any evidence, no probable cause or reasonable suspicion, and ended up launching what was a partisan investigation into the president of the United States with a wild conspiracy accusing the president of working with Vladimir Putin to fire Comey because Russia told him to do it. No evidence. They were angry. This was their punishment. This was their payback, abusing power to attack the president that they never want elected. Now, this brings us tonight to a Hannity history lesson. Glenn Greenwald recently pointed out that the FBI, in their investigation into Donald Trump, used eerily similar tactics to those pioneered by J. Edgar Hoover. Remember, Hoover served as an FBI director for many decades, and he became infamous for his aggressive investigations into Americans who he suspected had ties to the Soviet Union. Hoover even suspected FDR's vice president, Henry Wallace, to a lengthy probe and surveillance simply because Hoover disagreed with Wallace's policy. The FBI should never be in the business of investigating political differences or policy decisions. They shouldn't be, well, lashing out because of personal opinions that they have. The role of the FBI, which is the 99% of field agents and rank and file, they do their job. They investigate crimes and criminals, not politics, not policy, and especially not launching a counterintelligence investigation into a duly elected president with zero evidence because you don't like him. Now today, William Barr, President Trump's pick to be our next attorney general, faced his first day of confirmation hearings on the Hill. Senator Lindsey Graham, who'll join us later, grilled him about whether or not he would investigate the FBI's baseless, corrupt investigation into President Trump, taken out of anger for the firing of Comey. Let's take a look.
So we should always be on guard about the politician interfering in a investigation, but we should also have oversight of how the department works and those with this tremendous power use that power. Are you familiar with the January 11th New York Times article about FBI open inquiry into whether Trump was secretly working on behalf of Russians?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Would you promise me and this committee to look into this and tell us whether or not, in the appropriate way, a counterintelligence investigation was opened up by somebody at the FBI / Department of Justice against President Trump?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I think there are a number of investigations, as I understand it, going on in the department.
Have you ever heard of such a thing in all the time you've been associated with the Department of Justice?
I have never heard of that.
Are there rules about how you can do counterintelligence investigations?
I believe there are, Mr. Chairman.
So if you want to open up one against the president, are there any checks and balances?
Not outside the FBI.
Okay. Well, we need to look at that. In terms of people who are actually enforcing the law, don't we want to make sure they don't have an agenda?
That's right, Mr. Chairman.
Do you promise me as Attorney General, if you get this job, to look in to see what happened in 2016?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
So that's a good sign that William Barr cares about equal justice, equal application of our laws, and saying that he will serve as a fair Attorney General. Mr. Barr, there are no shortage of corrupt Trump haters to investigate, and many with a lot of power that they have abused. No shortage of crimes here. And tonight we're going to begin to lay out a roadmap of corruption for the new Attorney General-to-be. Our own Greg Jarrett has compiled a comprehensive list. We're going to start, we're not going to go through the full list tonight, with FISA abuse. That is lying to a FISA court. That is committing a fraud against a court to get a warrant to spy on a Trump campaign associate using Hillary Clinton's bought and paid for phony dossier that was full of Russian lies. Look at your screen. James Comey, Andrew McCabe, Sally Yates, Rod Rosenstein all likely committed fraud on a FISA court by presenting Hillary Clinton's dirty dossier as unbiased, verified evidence when reality, it was never verified, never corroborated, and full of Russian lies, and they never told the courts that it was bought and paid for by Hillary Clinton. Next up, Mr. Barr, if you get this job, you need to look into the theft and the leaking of government documents. Now, Jim Comey obviously committed a serious crime when he intentionally leaked his FBI memos about his conversations with the president. It's important to also look at abuse of power charges. That would be many of the same names. Comey, McCabe, Strzok, all fired. Lisa Page, resign in shame. Bruce Orr, demoted twice, should have been fired. All using their high positions in our federal government to persecute those they disagreed with politically. All trying to help Hillary Clinton get elected. And then having an insurance policy and a media leak strategy if, in fact, Donald Trump did win. And let's not forget about lying to the FBI. After all, this crime shouldn't only apply to an American war hero like General Flynn and Trump campaign staff like George Papadopoulos, who had to spend 2 weeks in jail for nothing. Andrew McCabe was literally fired over that charge. Is he going to receive the same treatment as General Flynn and be prosecuted? Now, the DOJ also will need to tackle the unauthorized leaks. We now know that James Baker is already facing a criminal investigation tonight over this charge, but so too are we going to look at John Brennan and James Clapper? And what about Susan Rice? And what about Samantha Power? Should they not be investigated over the massive amounts of names that they unmasked while serving in the final year of the Obama administration? And because of James Comey's biased and inept investigation of Hillary Clinton, an exoneration before an investigation, obvious violation of the Espionage Act, Mr. Barr must also revisit Hillary Clinton's various crimes, like, oh, deleting subpoenaed emails and deleting your hard drive and washing it with bleach bit and busting up...
Just things, just minor little details. This is the stuff I was talking about in the lead-up or the end of the last hour about Benghazi, 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 and about Susan Rice and her little... affair, the tatey-tay that's been going on with Susan Rice and the lie that Ben Rhodes was talking about. Anyway, with us right now, I do believe we do have We do have Brad Dacus with us, and we're going to make sure we get everything all taken care of with Brad. Brad, are you there with us on Agenda 21 Radio?
Yes, I am.
Brad, I'm really sorry we had some technical difficulties, and we're glad to have you with us right now for our little interview here. It's not going to be very insignificant. It's going to be very, very important. We have invited you on because, you know, you are one of the best attorneys around and legal minds going on right now, certainly here in California, but also in the nation. Tell us a little bit about who you are. We've known each other for, gosh, Brad, I think it's like 7 or 8 years.
Yeah, a long time.
Long time. Yeah.
A good number of years. I founded the Pacific Justice Institute by God's grace back in 1997. With the help of former U.S. Attorney General Ed Meese. He still serves as chairman of our advisory board. And we now have five offices in California, along with an office in Oregon and an office in the state of Washington. And we're sort of unique in that we defend religious freedom, parents' rights, the sanctity of human life, but we work hard to make sure that no one is left on the side of the road, that everyone gets help. So we don't just cherry-pick high-profile cases. That's very unique. And we work hard to make sure everyone gets help all across the United States. We do all our work completely without charge, and we're also broader. We get involved in kinds of cases that other organizations don't get involved in.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us about some of the – well, first of all, why did you start the Pacific Justice Institute? And like I said, you've been around for a long, long time, and we've spoken in different things together in Tea Party meetings and things of that nature, but – you've gotten yourself into some really high visibility lawsuits in which you've been victorious, I might add.
Yeah, we have had just a real success. We have a great legal team of attorneys who are on staff, as well as those who are affiliate attorneys who volunteer to take on cases periodically. And we've handled countless numbers of cases. There's, you know, it's not uncommon for someone to come up to me and say, "See, Brad, thank you so much for Pacific Justice Institute. You defended me in such and such, and the lawsuit was such and such." And I won't even remember it. I mean, because there's so many cases, so many things that have happened and gone on over the last 21 years. But I started it back in 97. At the time, I was a Western Regional Coordinator for an organization called the Rutherford Institute. I'd opened an office for them 5 years prior to that. They're headquartered back in Virginia. John W. Whitehead is the founder, as far as I'm concerned, of the postmodern religious freedom movement. He's the president of Rutherford, and I was so honored to be mentored by him. But after 5 years, the organization contracted dramatically, shut down their regional offices, and I had a choice to take a promotion and head up their public affairs office in Washington, D.C., and be their media face for all their cases across the United States, the number two person in the organization, in essence. Or boldly step out with shoestrings and continue the work here on the West Coast. And after praying about it, I chose the latter. And we started Pacific Justice Institute in 1997, and I haven't looked back.
Well, you know, one of the things that we are so disassociated from Washington, D.C. out here in California, and especially if you're conservatives, It really I don't think you disagree with that.
Right. Oh yeah, this is the blue curtain, and people sometimes wonder, say, you know, Brad, why does the Pacific Justice have an office in Kansas City or, you know, wherever? And I say, well, because that's not the front line. The front line is right here behind the blue curtain, from Seattle all the way down to San Diego along the coast,
right?
And in particular, and it's a real battle, and that's where we are, and that's we take on cases that are cutting-edge cases with the hopes of setting good case law to protect the rest of the country from these waves of assault on our freedoms and liberties.
And, you know, it's an ongoing battle, and I think that and people don't really understand this on the East Coast. Our show emanates from Washington, D.C., and we broadcast from California, but we emanate from Washington, D.C. with Red State Talk Radio, the leading edge digital talk radio provider in the nation. And it's interesting because we do a lot of talking to people in Washington, D.C., and we go back to Washington, D.C., and they really don't understand, I don't believe, in a general sense, what this wall is all about here on out here from Seattle down to San Diego. It's truly a wall of really serious problems, especially if they emanate from the schools, because I was a public school educator and I saw that firsthand and saw your good work that was developing back in the day. But it's absolutely imperative that we have some sort of representation against this blue wall. And I think you're one of the few that does it.
Yeah, I think you're right. Occasionally an organization will come in and handle a case somewhere and go out. But we handle overwhelmingly the majority of all the assaults on religious freedom, parents' rights, the sanctity of human life are handled by the Pacific Justice Institute. And I might add also, I thank those who donate their office space, because every one of our offices at the Pacific Justice has donated office space and almost all of its donated utilities. So we're very efficient to make sure that we put our resources where it really counts, which is making sure people get help.
Yeah, because it's not cheap to run these lawsuits.
Yeah, that's correct. But we do a good job and we work hard. And, you know, just one of our attorneys just 2 days ago, Matt McReynolds, argued a case before the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And it was basically defending parents' rights to get a second opinion before doctors unilaterally pull the cord and the life support off a little toddler or person. And we think this is very important because of the increasing number of people having the life support removed from them unilaterally by a doctor. And yet the people are not brain dead. And it's just a matter of economic efficiency. And that's very disturbing. That's a trend that we see that's very real in not just one case, but several cases we've had ongoing. One case, for example, we halted it less than an hour before they were going to pull the cord, and we've had emergency injunctions before, and this was a very important case, but we were able to get the child transferred to another hospital, Stanford Medical, where the child is now making progress, development progress. But these are the kinds of things that are new and cutting that we at Pacific Justice are taking on that no one else is bothering to take on.
Some of the most memorable, can you give us one of your most memorable educational cases, because your specialty has been for a long time, educational rights for parents.
Oh, yes. There's several. One is in terms of religious freedom. I will say, you know, we've had, a girl in Sacramento invite a couple of her friends to a church event and give invitations to it, and the school ordered her to apologize in writing 3 times and didn't even let the parents know. 3 times had to apologize for inviting someone to a church event. We stepped in. We had to file a lawsuit. Needless to say, the parent and the child won against the school. The school district learned their lesson. Hostility, bullying of kids because of their faith is one area. You know, a child wanted to sing a religious song in a talent show, a Christian song in a talent show, wasn't allowed to. This was in Elk Grove a number of years ago, and there's others. We've taken those on. But also we get involved when school districts have hideous curriculum dealing with sex ed or LGBTQ radical indoctrination kind of resource materials that they're giving to kids without parents knowing about it, without respecting parents' rights to opt out their kids, no prior notice. That's really a serious, serious problem that unfortunately is becoming a tidal wave for public schools all throughout California, especially with the new pending California's health curriculum, deals with health, but it's a lot of it deals with sex ed and sexual lifestyles. I can give you a few examples if you'd like, but it's just outrageous, and yet it's pending right now before the California Department of Education, Board of Education.
Yeah, and one of the things, and we're talking to Brad Dacus of the Pacific Justice Institute here on Agenda 21 Radio. One of the things that really disturbed me as an administrator and a superintendent was the whole individual education plan, the whole special education bailiwick, and I know you guys do a lot of work there. But the one thing I would always forbid my IEP teams, especially when I was the administrator in charge of them, We always forbid them from recommending or encouraging parents to have their children get a medical doctor to agree to give them psychotropic medications. I always said I laid down the law to all the teams I worked with, and hundreds of them, it seems like, over years, that we're not doctors as educators, and it's not in our position to encourage parents to get kids on psychotropic medications that are literally life-altering medications for some of these kids at a very young age. We're talking about Ritalin and things like that. That was something that I got later involved in suicidal things in schools and things like that. That was a big thing. But if you're a parent out there and you're in special education and you sense that your child is being encouraged, or you're sitting in an IEP meeting and the staff starts to encourage you to go to a doctor and have them, you know, get your child on meds, what would you recommend to that parent?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I don't hear much talk about that, but it's so important. We had a case specifically dealing with that down in the San Diego County several years ago. The mother, who the parent, ironically, was actually an MD herself, and she had her child in school. Child needed special ed. The school district decided that said, well, look, no, the child needs to be on Ritalin. And that's what you need to do. Just put him on Ritalin and he'll be fine. And she said, no, I'm not going to put him on Ritalin. I wanted special ed, proper training. And so the mother went ahead and pulled the child from the public school and homeschooled. Well, then they went after her for truancy.
Right.
And we defended her. And at the end of the day, she won. And the declaration was that the school was the party at fault for not doing their job, and instead insisting and pushing Ritalin. One study shows that roughly 40% of the students on Ritalin should not be on Ritalin, and it's used to just make, you know, boys who are anxious and with energy, you know, sort of calm them down, as opposed to really working with them. And the drug, it's very serious. It's a heavy medicine. Maybe some need it, but it's a serious issue with schools playing doctor and pushing drugs when they're making determinations when they are not qualified to make that determination or ultimatum for a child to be on that medication.
Well, you know, it's really interesting, and this is one of the things I emphasized. One time I was drawn into a case when I retired, and they asked me to represent a student who was being expelled, and she was taking psychotropic medications on the recommendation of the staff. And it just so happened that as I got involved in this child was up for expulsion, we immediately got the expulsion stayed and everything. And I realized that the counseling staff and everybody in the school was very, very quick and reflexive about recommending medications for kids. So during one of the hearings, post-expulsion hearings, but one of the placement hearings, I pulled out a list of all the psychotropic medications, and I highlighted, you know, some of the things that might come as a result of taking the medication. In almost every case, I think I had 30 different types of medications that they could possibly bring out to a parent. And in every one of those cases, it always said suicidal tendencies or thoughts. And I highlighted that as I handed out this list. And I'll never forget those counselors looking at that and their heads going down further and further and further. And, of course, there was, as I talked to the principal later on, he said, we'll never, ever recommend a parent take their child to the doctor to get psychotropic medications again.
It's very serious. And parents also need to recognize, too, that sometimes doctors will push, you know, drugs like that, you know, or Prozac and medications, serotonin,
Adderall,
you know, kind of drugs. But in reality, what the child may need is actually an anticonvulsion, like an anti-seizure drug. Like Neurotrin and things like that, which don't have those side effects and are really dealing with the actual brain issue. And that's the problem is we're so quick, even just general practicing MDs, to give medications that really need to be given out by a specialist that can really examine the child appropriately. I'm not a doctor, but I just read about it.
Right.
So.
Well, you know what? I can tell you from my own experience.
Don't rely on what I'm saying. Go to the doctor. But,
yeah.
It's true. There is tremendous abuse taking place by public school districts with regards to children with special needs or other issues that are really not being handled properly.
Well, you know, one of the other things, too, that I always noticed, and I've done hundreds of these IEP meetings, is that in almost 95% of them, there is no father present in the meeting. And I always will confront that with everybody. Of course, that was just sort of my nature. And, of course, the child oftentimes will just break into tears because they don't have a father in the family. And that seems to be a constant, if you will, through this whole special education miasma, is that the fathers are absent.
Right.
And I think it might be a pretty good antidote, actually, for some of these kids. But that's a societal thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But these kids need boundaries, and they need often a father to help enforce those boundaries. And that is a real problem.
Yeah. Yeah. So, what's the next trick that's going to happen with the Pacific Justice Institute in terms of some of your major cases out there that you're seeing?
Well, right now, actually, we're busily looking for plaintiffs and for psychologists, psychiatrists to defend them, as well as minors under the age of 18 in those states that have banned counseling for those who are under 18 or struggling with same-sex attraction or gender identity issues. These states have banned the ability for those minors to get that kind of counseling in accordance with their religious beliefs and convictions to deal with those feelings. And it makes it illegal for the person to try to get those counseling as well as for a licensed counselor to provide that counseling. We believe that's ripe for challenge. And we at Pacific Justice Institute are talking to everyone across the United States. If you're in a state like that, you either know of someone who wants that counseling, or you're a licensed counselor or psychologist, we'd love to represent them because we think it's very ripe to take it for the Supreme Court.
Wow. Well, you know, that's a pretty good challenge, and I think that it's a worthy challenge. I know that those were kind of like the forbidden areas that we never ventured out onto when I was in education. I mean, I'd never allow it, basically, as a school administrator, because I thought it was very, very inappropriate to be making those kind of overtures, if you will, for anybody. I just think that there's an infringement that oftentimes happens with the schools and the parents, and I think that parents need to have the space to be able to have that communication with their kid rather than the school intervening or the state intervening in that regard.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And we have so many problems, with the government trying to restrict our freedoms and liberties. You know, we at Pacific Justice Institute participated in a case, had a major case. We were the first to file a lawsuit to challenge a law in California that banned such counseling, and it went to the United States Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court, there were a number of cases brought on afterwards, but the Supreme Court ruled that law was unconstitutional, in terms of the assault on. What happened is it was actually through a law banning pro-life pregnancy clinics from being able to operate without having a large sign telling women where they get a free or low-cost abortion. And the Supreme Court said that that's a violation of the First Amendment, but they also went on to say that that's a violation of the free speech rights of licensed professionals, which includes psychologists, psychiatrists. So the Supreme Court, with that decision, that big win, gave us this big, giant, green, flashing green light saying, go ahead and challenge these other state restrictions on speech from professionals, from real estate agents to beauticians to psychologists, doctors, lawyers, and that's what we're going to be very busy doing over the next several years in a number of different fronts.
Well, you know, one of the big questions that's going on in my life and in our world over here is this new California State Initiative and movement, which has now really gotten big legs, starting to stand on its own, 52 counties being involved with the process of forming a new state. California, in my opinion, and it has been for a long time, is sort of a failed state at this point, especially over the last election. And I think that what we witnessed with the Gavin Newsom inauguration, in which the citizens were banned from seeing the governor being sworn in, which is kind of ironic, I think we've kind of crossed the Rubicon of what we can see happening in California, walking into the steps of totalitarianism.
Yeah, it is frightening, and I don't like to use those kind of words. I don't like people, you know, being all anxious over things that need to be. But California is at a very dangerous point because, number one, we, as you said, we have a governor who is the most liberal governor probably in California history, if maybe not U.S. history. We'll see how things actually pan out. Second, the legislature has a two-thirds majority in the state assembly and state senate, so they can pass anything they want, and Republicans can't do much about it at all to stop it. From social change legislation to increase in taxes, socialist programs, and so we see terrible things taking place: assaults and affronts on religious freedom, parental rights, government control, government monitoring, and you know, and that's why we're so busy with the work that we're doing. You know, like for another example, even on the local level, this is a property tax against churches. You know, we just don't see that. That's unthinkable. Even before our nation was a nation, you don't tax churches and synagogues.
Right. So
what the government can tax, the government can control and even shut down and destroy through policies and regulations, et cetera. Well, this town, San Rafael, decided to issue property taxes against everyone, including churches and synagogues. And this little Baptist church, had to come up with $13,000 or their doors would be shut by the state. So we've stepped in, and we filed a lawsuit, and we got that declared unconstitutional under the state constitution. But I think we're going to see more and more aggressive efforts in this regard. Another case was in Wisconsin just recently. The town of DePere, Wisconsin, issued an ultimatum, an ordinance, saying that churches, Christian radio stations, that they had to not discriminate in their hiring of employees based upon the same-sex sexual marriage or relationships that their employees are having. Well, that's absurd when you're talking about especially a religious institution or ministry that has strong convictions, is grounded on Scripture, to the contrary of that. And they were going to shut them all down. And we could not stop them in the administrative process. We went ahead and filed a lawsuit. And lo and behold, the judge declared that was unconstitutional, what the city was trying to do. It is concerning when we see that kind of a mindset, intolerant, discriminatory mindset against people of faith and institutions of faith and people wanting to practice their faith.
Well, you know, this is the thing. This is what's happening in California, though. I mean, we're down this, unfortunately, quite a road that I don't see that there's any coming back. That's why New California has all of a sudden gotten the legs that it's gotten. In fact, we're having our third constitutional convention coming up here on the 26th, and I know that Kevin Snyder is going to be here as the speaker at the convention, which we will find very, very enlightening. But I think that what's going on in California will not stop until something unfortunate happens, or unless there's a new state that breaks it up and draws attention to what is going to be happening in California to stop it. Because if this whole situation, the monoparty system, as you described and what we describe in our grievances, is allowed to stand, there is no representative, there's no Republican form of governance. And with the 11-month legislative cycle that they have, they can pass as many laws as they want. 1,016 were passed last year. And you know, the thing about a lot of people, and you understand this, the legislative process usually takes quite a while to get a bill through, but they're able to expedite these things and get them passed in just a couple of days and on the governor's desk in no time at all. And it's kind of interesting the way it all plays out. But this is the road to a monoparty system and a dictatorship.
Exactly. And the mindset of those in power is very dangerous because they see the government as the final solution and answer to any problem and any issue, and the agenda that they have is so extreme for what they feel is right. The far left dominates and controls, not just influences, but controls the state capital of Sacramento. So, I'm really excited about what you're trying to accomplish. I know Kevin Snyder is our chief counsel attorney. He coordinates all of our litigation across the country, and I know he'll be a very insightful speaker for your upcoming event there in Sacramento.
Well, listen, Brad, tell us how we can get a hold of you and the Pacific Justice Institute.
You bet. You can go through our website the best way, which is pji.org or pacificjustice.org, pacificjustice.org, pacificjustice.org. And we've got great resources, free resources there, including, like for example, opt-out forms where parents in all 50 states can use that to opt their kids out of objectionable materials. It is a no-brainer. It's all without charge. We have other resources, a free book, Reclaim Your School, how to go on the offensive with regards to challenges in public schools, we defend business owners of faith who are under attack, a training video on how they can live in their faith and be protected in the workplace through their business, and many, many other wonderful resources, as well as sign up to get our Legal Insider newsletter, which keeps people updated every week on the cases and things that are going on so they can pray for us and get the word out.
Well, listen, Brad, thank you very much for being with us here on Agenda 21 Radio, and we look forward to working with you.
Awesome, and thanks for the privilege of being on the program. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, that was Brad Dacus of the Pacific Justice Institute, and we're really happy to have had Brad here on the radio show and, get in touch with him. Go to his website, pacificjusticeinstitute.org or pji.org. That's probably the best way. And, it's interesting. we're not the only one. When you have people like Brad Dacus, and there's a lot of other people in the legal world that are seeing and saying exactly what we've been saying here on Agenda 21 Radio about California and about the whole California experience. This is something that has been in the works for a long time, if you will, in terms of this road to totalitarianism in California. That's why we started the radio show years ago, because we saw this. It was happening. And we were concerned it was going to happen to the nation, but now Trump's come along and kind of broken that up, because it was very, very clear that what we had with Barack Hussein Obama was the seed plant for totalitarianism here in this country. Just a thought I'd share that with you. Anyway, William Barr, we're going to switch gears here and get another story, but William Barr has been the man that's sort of been on the move, so to speak. He is the guy who is taking Jeff Sessions' place as Attorney General. And it's kind of an interesting thing about William Barr. He worked for the Bush administration, and he says he's friends with a Mueller. Been friends for a long time. His wife and Mueller's wife go to Bible study together, yet Donald Trump has brought him in. And again, Barr was with the Bush administration for a long time as the Attorney General. He's been down this road, if you will, of being Attorney General, so it's not a big surprise to him about some of the things that are happening. So the question is, will he be, in fact, brought in as the sitting Attorney General? And we think so. Today is day two of his hearings, and he has been he's being grilled. Even I think as we actually it says it's live. We'll see what kind of live things we're getting here. But it says it's live that he's being actually grilled right now. We might be able to hear the sizzle in just a few minutes once we get this sort of thing going on. I'd like you to hear a little bit of this stuff live that's coming from the Senate hearings, but I don't know if we're going to be able to hear it. Anyway, but William Barr is quite an accomplished individual in terms of the justice system. I'm kind of neutral on this guy. You know, if it was an Eric Holder, I'd say, no, you can't have him. But Bill Barr has some conservative credentials, even though I'm suspicious. How can you not be suspicious of the fact that you have his friendship with Mueller. Now, We were speculating. I was doing a conference yesterday. We're speculating about this, and I'll share some of that. We're going to join the hearing just to grab a few minutes of this, a few seconds.
Report on that House bill that we have with the training and the
see where we're at and all this stuff.
Officers, and thank you for your support and work on that. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take a 10-minute recess.
Oh, there you go. We're going to take a 10-minute recess. That's from the bar hearing. And Bill Sass, I think his name is? Senator Sass? Compelling and persuasive yesterday. Wants to follow rules and regulations involving the Mueller probe. There were a lot of questions yesterday coming from Republicans and Democrats. Senator Coons, he was very suspicious of Mr. Barr. And here we have Mr. Sass.
Good to be here. So these calls for him to recuse, I mean, of course, we knew the Mueller investigation was going to be in the spotlight, but do you think he should?
I think his answers were good. I mean, he explained there would be circumstances where one might recuse. He
wanted Ben Sass
to seek the counsel of career
speaking
ethics officials
right now
at the department.
About
but then he would
him.
Make the judgment based on the rules and the regulations. I think it was a good answer.
So there were a lot of pushes today about how much of the Mueller investigation he would try to get public. Here's what he said about what he'll do on that front.
I am going to try to get the information out there consistent with these regulations, and to the extent I have discretion, I will exercise that discretion to do that.
But again and again, there were Democrats who pressed him to give out everything that he could, short of classified information. What do you think? What role?
Well, there's two things going on here. The first one was all about should he recuse himself, such as what Jeff Sessions said, because of Mueller and his friendship with Mueller. And basically, that's not going to happen. That, you know, and I believe what Barr was saying just before we got to the whole clip here, but what he was saying was, in fact, that there's no reason for me to be, I wasn't involved in anything. And it was a political issue that brought Sessions to step out and recuse himself. Now, so he's not eligible. He doesn't view himself as eligible to be recusing himself. Now, the next issue, of course, hangs around other things that, you know, about Mueller and how much should come out about his investigation. And he says he just says it. I'm going to exercise my discretion. Now, here's where we were talking yesterday, myself and several other people, about this Barr thing, is why is Barr being considered if he's a friend of Mueller, right? Is he a transitional attorney general, will be in for less than 2 years? Now, think about this. Is he the guy who's going to come in and kind of put things back in order in the Justice Department as he gets rid of more people that clearly have been corrupted through this whole system? This whole system that's gone on under the, you know, from the Obama administration and now this whole Mueller investigation, the whole Russia probe, to get rid of these people. I think he's doing just that. I think he's a transitional leader who is going to get rid of and clean up the Justice Department. That's what I think. We'll see.
We're sending out an SOS to the last vestiges of freedom, democracy, and the American way of life. Paul Preston with Agenda 21.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, inventor of MyPillow. Thanks to your support, you've helped make MyPillow become one of the fastest growing companies in America. Over the last 12 years, you've helped MyPillow create thousands of jobs right here in the USA. Every MyPillow is made with passion here in my home state of Minnesota to ensure you get the best sleep of your life.
I've never slept better in my life. What's better than a great night's sleep?
Sleep is one of the most important things to your health, and MyPillow is one of the most important things to your sleep.
Call or go to MyPillow.com now, and Mike will give you two MyPillow premiums for one low price. Use the promo code, and you'll also receive free shipping. That's two MyPillow premiums for one low price.
I tried every pillow from expensive down pillows that just went flat to fiber-fill pillows that rebound every time you move your head. I even tried those memory foam pillows, and the curve did not match my neck, and it probably won't match yours. That's why I invented MyPillow. My patented fill adjusts to your exact individual needs and helps keep your neck supported and aligned.
MyPillow lasts 10 years, is machine washable and dryable, and comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee.
I personally guarantee MyPillow will be the most comfortable pillow you'll ever own or your money back.
Call or go to MyPillow.com now, and Mike will give you two MyPillow premiums for one low price. Use the promo code, and you'll also receive free shipping. That's two MyPillow premiums for one low price.
With our 60-day money-back guarantee, you have nothing to lose.
Sleep well, America!
Call 800-266-4715. That's 800-266-4715 when you use the promo code AGENDA. 800-266-4715, promo code AGENDA.
For the best night's sleep in the whole wide world, visit MyPillow.com.
Do you have a treasure box of coins, jewelry, silverware? Ever wonder if they have any value? We offer friendly, free, fair appraisals and pay cash on the spot.
Bring them to your local coin shop, Yuba City Coin and Bullion, by the 10th Street Bridge. Always buying and selling gold, silver, and platinum jewelry, U.S. and foreign coins, sterling silverware, placer gold.
It's a great time to make some extra cash and invest in bullion, junk silver, gold and silver ingots, eagles, and maple leaves. We specialize in all precious metals. And for you coin collectors,
and for those just starting,
we have a wide selection of type coins and currency. We're PCGS and NGC affiliated. So swing by your local coin shop, Yuba City Coin and Bullion.
438 Colusa Highway by the 10th Street Bridge. Friendly service, fair prices. Yuba City Coin and Bullion. 755 Coin.
My best friend, my rock, my son, Dominic, my only child, was also killed by an illegal immigrant. I call them illegal aliens.
Take off the tinfoil hat and put on the Kevlar. It's time for battle. With Paul Blessing and the Agenda 21 Show.
We're back on Agenda 21 Radio. Remember to visit our website, agenda21radio.news, agenda21radio.news. Okay, Brad Dacus, Pacific Justice Institute. You can get this on the podcast on Agenda 21 Radio. Go to the podcast up in the menu bar on a21r.com, a21r.com, and check it out. Check it out. A lot of really good things on that website, but also newcaliforniastate.com, newcaliforniastate.com. And you can go to the website and check out the volunteer clicker if you're in California, because you want to volunteer for your county. Definitely do that. We have a lot of people volunteering, which is wonderful. And also, if you could donate, please feel free to donate to New California State. It's expensive running this operation, obviously. But all of your money will go to a worthy cause, to be able to create New California. As you heard what Brad Dacus was talking about, there's a dictatorship going on here in California. Monoparty system, it's not good. It won't end well for California unless New California comes around. That's what we've always been saying. New California is the antidote, if you will, for California. That's really what it comes down to. It's the antidote for California. And we fully intend to be, I guess you can say we can be the people that will be setting it straight. You know, the whole notion of being able to create New California is not to destroy California. Not at all. It's to make it a more perfect union. 51 states, the 51st star on the flag, is about to happen. So go out and get your flags with 51 stars, because that star will be for New California. Anyway, thanks for listening to Agenda 21 Radio. Remember to visit our website, a21r.com, and stay strong, America. Stay strong. We are exceptional Americans.
We're sending out an SOS to the last vestiges of freedom, democracy, and the American way of life. Paul Preston with Agenda 21.
This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.